This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shofetim, chapter 2. This chapter begins with a malach of Hashem, an angel of Hashem, addressing and rebuking the Jewish people. The rabbis tell us that this malach, this messenger, is actually Pinchas, the grandson of Aharon, the first Kohen Gadol. Pinchas reminded the Jews of all that Hashem had done for them, saving them from Mitzrayim, from Egypt, bringing them to the land that he promised, and also reminded the Jewish people of their commitments, their promises, their obligations to Hashem. Specifically, the problem at this time was that the Jews had failed in the expectation that they would remove all of the Kena'anim, all of the idolatrous populations, all of the altars and sanctuaries dedicated to idolatry from their midst and cleanse the land of Israel of all idolatry. Instead, they allowed these Kena'anim to coexist with them under peaceful terms. Now, for a while, this may have seemed like a wise choice. The people were tired of fighting, perhaps. They wanted to exhibit tolerance. Maybe they enjoyed the idea of having certain communities under their thumb. Who knows? But the bottom line is that the Torah warned them that this would create a situation that would eventually be seriously problematic from spiritual and political vantage points. The people cried when they heard this harsh criticism coming from this messenger of Hashem, hence the name of the place, Bochim, which refers to the crying. But in the end, it doesn't seem like they really changed their ways or really internalized what the message was, because they continued to allow these Kena'anim to dwell in their midst despite all of these warnings. Now, the chapter proceeds to kind of chart the decline of the spiritual level of the Jewish people, backtracking a little bit to the time of Yehoshua, and then going forward to where we are now in the chapter. During the time of Yehoshua and during the time of the Zekinim, who were alive in the times of Yehoshua, as long as there were people still alive who had witnessed all of the Nisim v'Niflaot, all of the miracles, the crossing of the Yarden, the wandering in the desert, the Jews remained very committed and seriously devoted to the Torah. They weren't seduced by any idolatry. However, as soon as that generation was completely gone, the new generation that arose, none of whom had seen the miracles firsthand, began to assimilate slowly into the surrounding culture and eventually went so far as to worship idols directly. Just as the Torah said, the worship of idols, the assimilation, the imitation of the surrounding Gentiles would cause Hashem to withdraw his providence from them and would make them exposed to to harm from their neighbors and from their enemies. And in fact, they were harassed, persecuted, subjugated by Kena'anim of various stripes, some of whom had once paid them tribute and been in a position of subservience to them, but now had the upper hand. And because Hashem was no longer with them, was no longer helping them to drive out their enemies or to protect themselves from their enemies, they struggled mightily to maintain a foothold in the land. They were at a great disadvantage. This chapter is really an introduction, in a way, to the fundamental motif or theme of the Book of Shofetim, what I like to call the cycle. Many people call the cycle of the Book of Shofetim. The cycle is that most of the narratives follow a certain pattern in the Book of Shofetim, which is identified and really introduced in this chapter. The cycle is that the Jews will fall into a pattern of idolatry at first. They will become disconnected from the Torah, abandon the Torah, assimilate, and then they will lose the hashgacha. They will lose the divine providence that's protecting them. And as a function of that, they lose their political independence, their autonomy, their security, their economic success. They lose all of the blessings that the Torah tells us that we'll lose when we deviate from the teachings of it, of the Torah, and when we stop observing the mitzvot. After this, in the cycle, the second stage of the cycle is that the Jews open their eyes. They realize that the reason why they're suffering so much, the reason why they've lost all of the blessings they had, is because they abandoned Hashem and they abandoned the Torah, and then they return. Generally, under the guidance, under the leadership of some great person called the Shofet. The Shofet could come in many varieties, as we'll learn about all the different personalities and contributions of the Shofetim. They were different from one another, but this Shofet would guide them back to the Torah. Through guiding them back to the Torah, readied them to be able once again to assume responsibility as an independent and autonomous nation in their land. And so, as a result of this turnaround in the third stage, they become worthy of Hashem's providence again. They begin to prevail over their enemies again. They regain sovereignty. They start to enjoy the blessings of the material blessings of the land of Israel, prosperity again, like they once did. So, in other words, everything is happily ever after, except that once the Shofet dies, the Shofet that originally led them back to this sort of renaissance of spirituality and political revolution, they lose their momentum and they fall right back into the clutches of idolatry again. This is what happens at the end of every cycle. And sadly and tragically, each time they fall harder. They fall to an even lower level of depravity, as the book of Shofetim will show us. And we'll see that even the Shofetim themselves exhibit this trend. The earlier Shofetim are much greater, more illustrious, at a higher level of development and perfection than the later Shofetim, who are don't provide the same caliber of leadership as the early Shofetim. Now, and that's really the key to the book. Once you understand that cycle, you can decode and sort of contextualize all of the stories that we're going to read throughout the book. They all fit this pattern. And when the pattern begins to break down, that's when we see an even further decline in the stature of the Jewish people, as we'll see in the chapters ahead. Now, one fascinating question I just wanted to address on the side is, why do the rabbis identify this anonymous messenger or angel as Pinchas? It's always fascinating when the rabbis connect biblical personalities with anonymous characters and stories and claim that the anonymous characters are really these personalities. So why did they decide that this messenger was Pinchas? And some of the Mefarshim, the traditional Mefarshim, adopt this view as well, even some that are typically skeptical of Midrashic interpretation. So they must have a compelling reason for this association, and I'd like to suggest that if we look at the personality and career of Pinchas, we know that he rose to prominence when he witnessed Zimri, a prince of Israel, taking a Midianite woman with him into a tent in order to commit an immoral act with her in a public act of defiance against the Torah, against Moshe Rabbeinu, really against the whole concept of the holiness of the Jewish people. He went and he killed them both in that moment that they were together, and thereby demonstrated that he really had an understanding of the dangers of assimilation, the threat that it posed. And he recognized the need to sometimes confront it aggressively when necessary. And so it's reasonable that, you know, he might be the person who would stand in the breach here and fight against the laxity of the Jews in taking precautions against assimilation. They didn't rid their land of the influences and the encroachment of idolaters. And he knew that down the road, this would lead to more and more problems for them, the dilution of Judaism, intermarriage, and eventually political and economic crises as well. Perhaps the fact that Pinchas was associated with fighting against assimilation and syncretism and with the resistance to the influence of idolatry and tolerance of idolatry and his recognition of how that can affect, how that can corrupt Judaism, maybe that was the reason why they saw in this messenger who had a similar concept, who was trying to convey a similar idea, the necessity of cleansing the land of Israel of idolatry before it was too late. Maybe this is why the two personalities were associated with one another in the rabbinic midrash.